الجامعة الافتراضية السورية، كتاب القانون الدولي للدكتور عماد الدين محمد. تقدمت مبادرة ضوء بصوت رغد حمام. Module 2 Sources of International Law Learning Objectives. By the end of this chapter, you should be able to identify the different sources of international law. Distinguish between formal sources and material sources on international law. Identify the material element and psychological element. Recognize the treaties and their position in international law. Understand the general principles of international law. Explain the principles of equity and how it relates to the application of international law. Recognize the material subsidiary sources of international law, judicial decisions. Be aware of the writings of publicists. Be able to refer to other possible sources of international law, such as acts of the international organizations. Understand the meaning of jus cogens. Sources of international law. How is the legal equality of the alleged rules of international law assessed? The answer to the above question can be found in the provisions of Article 38 of the Statute of International Court of Justice, ICJ. Article 38 does not actually mention the term sources, but it does indicate how the court should decide disputes which may come before it for settlement. The statute provides that the court is to apply A. International conventions, whether general or particular, establishing rules expressly recognized by the contesting states. B. International custom, as evidence of a general practice accepted as law. C. The general principle of law recognized by civilized nations. D. Subject to the provisions of Article 59, judicial decisions and the teachings of the most highly qualified publicists of various nations, as subsidiary means for the Number 2. This provision shall not prejudice the power of the court to decide a case ex aequo bono if both parties are in agreement. Sources may be characterized as formal or material. Formal sources constitute what the law is. Material sources only identify where the law may be found. Therefore, Article 38, 1, A to C, treaties, custom, and general principles are formal sources, but in Article 38, 1, D, judicial decisions and justice teaching are material sources. Article 38 is essentially a direction to the International Court of Justice on how disputes coming before it should be resolved. Despite the absence of the term sources, Article 38 is regarded as an authoritative statement on the sources of international law. Article 38 does not stipulate that it is establishing a hierarchy. But it is self-evident that Article 38 is nonetheless establishing a hierarchy of the procedure for the application of international law in the settlement of international disputes. Each category of law referred to in Article 38 will be examined. Custom is cited secondly in Article 38 because it has historically preceded treaties. A consideration of what is custom shall be examined first. Custom. custom, through the absence of international exclusive and legislature, has exercised an influential role in the formation of international law. Definition of custom. Definition of custom. Custom in international law is a practice followed by those feel legally obliged to behave in a certain way. Custom must be distinguished from mere usage. A rule of customary international law derives its law hallmark through the possession of two elements, a material and a psychological element. A. Material element. The material element refers to the behavior and the practice of states. Duration of practice. There is no set limit and no demand that the practice should be engaged in since time immemorial. The fact that a practice has been engaged in only for a brief period of time will not prevent the formation of a customary rule, provided that the other requirements of a custom are met. Extent of state practice. Before state practice can be acknowledged as law, it has to be in compliance with a constant and uniform usage practiced by the state in question. State practice. Treaties, diplomatic correspondence, and statements made by national legal advisors on domestic and international affairs are some of the indicators of state practice. Despite these indicators of state practice, public manifestations of state practice remain an important component. B. Psychological element. Practice in itself does not establish custom. An alleged rule of customary international law has to manifest not only a material element, but a psychological element, which is known as opinio juris. Opinio juris refers to the subjective belief maintained by state that a particular practice is legally required of them. This means a practice which is generally followed, which states feel they are legally free to disregard at any time, cannot be characterized as law. Opinio juris may be cautiously derived from inter alia, the attitude of the parties and the states towards General Assembly resolutions. It was emphasized that the effect of consent to the text of such resolutions cannot be understood as merely that of reiteration or elucidation of the treaty commitment in the Charter. Instead, it is an acceptance of the validity of the rule or set of rules declared by the resolutions. The problem with opinio juris is one of proof. It can be difficult to determine when the transformation into law has taken place. How can a state's conviction be proven to exist? Essentially, what must be proved is the state's acceptance, recognition, or acquiescence in the binding character of the rule in question. The onus of proof is on the state relying upon the custom. It is on the party alleging the existence of custom which must demonstrate that the custom is so established that the other party is bound by it, and insufficient evidence of opinio juris is fatal to a case. Opinio juris and state practice are complementary in the creation of a customary international law. Finally, there is another category of custom known as instant custom, which refers to spontaneous activity practiced by a great number of states acting as they want to act. Instant custom is rare. Two examples of instant custom are the doctrine of the continental shelf originating from the President Truman's proclamation in 1945, and the unilateral seaward extension throughout the 1970s by coastal states. The term instant custom may appear to be an unsuitable term, yet there is no other term in usage. However, the activity it describes, while not fitting into the module of traditional custom, still falls under any new source of law. As stressed already, instant custom is an exception from the norm. Treaties. Treaties are only examined here in so far as they constitute a source of law. Treaties, as Article 38A infers, may be between two states, bipartite, or between several states, multipartite. A distinction is sometimes drawn between law-making treaties, trade laws, and the treaty contracts, trade contracts. The essence of the distinction is because a treaty contracts, being agreements between relatively few parties, can only create particular law between the signatories. However, treaties to which there are many signatories create law per se. All treaties involve a contractual obligation for the parties concerned, and consequently, they create law for all parties agreeing to the terms of the treaty. So, a partite treaty does not create a lesser law than does a multipartite treaty. Multipartite treaties may have a wider effect, and as such may be regarded as law-making, in that not only do they have a greater number of signatories, but the provisions of such a treaty may become customary international law. Multipartite treaties may never have the truly legislative effect of municipal legislation, have a quasi-legislative effect which at least prima facie denied to bipartite treaties. Conversely, a multipartite or bipartite treaty may merely clarify what has been accepted as customary international law, and a provision contained repeatedly in bipartite treaties may provide evidence that a particular rule of customary international law exists. Alternatively, it may be argued that the very fact the state inserts the rule in a bilateral treaty is evidence that such a rule does not exist under customary international law. Treaties, therefore, regulate diverse and extensive subject matter, including inter alia, drug control, space exploitation, the establishment of organizations, extradition and safety regulations in the air and sea. Customary law and law made by treaty have equal authority as international law, but if a treaty and a customary rule exist simultaneously on the issue in dispute, then the treaty provisions take precedence. Nevertheless, though the modification of customary law by treaty is common, there are few instances of rules of customary law developing in conflict with earlier agreements. In such cases, the principle that the latter in time prevails will be applied on the presumption that the parties to the treaty have impliedly given their consent. a presumption exists against the replacement of customary rules by treaty and vice versa. Treaties are not intended to derogate from customary law, and a treaty which seemingly modifies or alters established custom should be construed so as to best conform to, rather than derogate from, accepted principles of the international law. This is unless the treaty in question is clearly intended to alter the existing rules of custom. A treaty will not, however, prevail over prior customary law if the latter is jus cogens. There are two types of treaties, which, because of their purpose, produce consequences which non-signatories cannot ignore. These are treaties which establish a special international regime, treaties which establish an international organization. These treaties are unusual. Constitutive treaties establishing international institutions, such as the UN, have created organizations which possess varying degrees of international personality. This personality has allowed such entities to operate on the international stage and which has, in certain instances, been enforced against non-member states. General principles of law as recognized by civilized nations. General principles of law were formed to simplify the understanding of international law to enable easier judgments. The general principles were principles which were understood by the so-called civilized nations. However, the term civilized nations is no longer used due to its colonial associations. It is not clear whether general principles refer to those of the international legal system or those of municipal legal systems. This lack of clarity can be an advantage as it imposes no restraint on the principles which may be applied. These legal principles are based on the developed municipal legal systems, so the general principles are common to the major legal systems of the world. Legal principles which are applied by the international tribunals and the international court and its predecessor have been those of a state's responsibility for acts of its agents. The principle of estoppel, personal bar, which means no one must be a judge of his or her own case, and the principle of reparation. Similarities with municipal legal system have been utilized in new areas of international law and can be found within commercial and administrative law. There is no agreed definition of the extent or scope of general principles, but despite the lack of a precise definition, their importance remains that resource to them has prevented a case from being rejected on the grounds that current international law is inadequate for dealing with a particular issue raised. Whether a particular general principle is eligible for inclusion by international law depends upon the development of international law at the time in question. The prohibition on the use of torture is now enshrined within international law based on the fact that the prohibition of torture is prima facie common to all legal systems. Equity. Equity is a part of international law, and equitable principles are referred to in multipartite treaties, including the 1982 Convention on the Law of the Sea and certain General Assembly resolutions. the principles of equity, such as fairness, justice, and reasonableness, are associated with general principles. Equity differs from the general principles, which are most frequently applied because general principles are mainly involved with procedural techniques. Equity is a concept which reflects values that can affect the application of law, but equity cannot be a source of law itself, as although it does not contribute to substantive law, it can affect the way substantive law is administered and applied. So, equity can assist in supporting existing rules. Equity must be distinguished from the international court's power to decide a case ex aequo bono if the parties agree thereto. This means that the court may apply equity in precedence over all other rules. A judge can only exercise power under Article 38(2) if he/she has been expressly authorized to do so. The material subsidiary sources. Judicial decisions. The International Court of Justice, ICJ. Despite the absence of the rule of stare decisis, binding precedent, in international law, in which the court is obliged to follow its previous decisions, the ICJ and international tribunals examine previous decisions and take them into account when seeking the solution to the subsequent dispute. The ICJ has delivered several judgments and advisory opinions which have made an influential contribution to the development of international law. Examples of these can be seen in the reparation case, legal personality of the UN. And also, arbitration decisions have contributed to the growth of international law, such as seen in Alabama arbitration awards, duties of a neutral state. So, a judicial decision by the ICJ may legitimize an alleged rule of custom. To conclude, although the ICJ is disbarred from the participating in the law-making process, in practice, this is not the realistic view. Decisions of the ICJ have a similar impact upon international law as do the decisions of the House of Lords, now known as the Supreme Court in United Kingdom law, without the formal doctrine of stare decisis, binding precedent. Decisions of municipal courts. Article 38 of the ICJ statute does not place limitations on judicial decisions of the international tribunals. Therefore, if a decision of municipal court is relevant, it may be applied. The actual weight of any decision of a national court will depend upon the standing of the court concerned. The United States, U.S. Supreme Court is held in high esteem, and it is its decisions dealing with individual states' boundaries. It has both applied and played a role in developing the relevant principles of international law. Similarly, decisions of the English prize courts contributed to the growth of prize law relating to vessels captured at sea during war. A decision of a municipal court may also act as evidence of a state's position on a particular issue. However, it must also be noted that even though a national court may seem to be applying a rule of international law, it may actually be applying a rule of national law, as in issues concerned with sovereign and diplomatic immunity. Writings of Publicists. Teachings of the most highly qualified publicists of various nations may be referred to as subsidiary means in an attempt to settle a dispute. Writers have played a considerable role in the development of international law. Their influence has been due partly to the absence of an executive and a legislative body, in part to the fact that the international legal system is still fairly young. During the formative period of the international legal system, writers were, because of insufficient state practice, able to help determine, mold, and articulate the scope, content, and basic principles of international law. For example, Grotius, Freedom of the Seas, in 1625. However, as the substantive law of international law increased via, for example, state practice and the growth of customary international law, the role of writers declined. Nevertheless, international law is still a relatively young system and its boundaries are constantly being extended. With writers who may still make a contribution in identifying and highlighting areas where international regulation should be introduced. For example, with regard to the issues of environmental pollution. Writers may also prompt an assessment of the aims and values of international law. Writings, though they have receded in importance, are utilized not as source of law in themselves, but as a means of ascertaining what the law actually is on any given subject. They are a subsidiary means of determining that the law is on a particular issue at a particular point of time, and, in the absence of any rule of stare decisis, binding precedent, in international law. Writings do not necessarily carry less weight than judicial decisions. Obviously, which of those publicists are the most highly qualified cannot be conclusively proved. Other possible sources of international law. Acts of the international organizations. The last 40 or so years has witnessed the formation of numerous international organizations. The best known, enjoying almost universal membership, is the United Nations, UN. Every member state of the UN possesses one vote within the General Assembly. Voting on important questions requires a two-thirds majority, whilst on all other questions a simple majority will suffice. Only those resolutions adopted by the Assembly on a procedure and budgetary questions are legally binding on members. All other resolutions are recommendations or statements on a given issue. However, certain General Assembly, GA, resolutions, which are declarations of principle, possess considerable force in although they carry no legal obligation. Examples are Resolution 1514, Declaration on the Granting of Independence to Colonial Countries and Peoples, and the GA, Declaration on Principles of International Law Concerning Friendly Relations and Cooperations Amongst States in Accordance with the Charter of the United Nations, 1970. Although such resolutions may contribute to the development of international law, the status of customary international law was denied to GA. Resolution 3281, Charter of Economic Rights and the Duties of States, 1974, by the arbitrator in the Texaco case. General resolutions are an example of what is known as soft law. Soft law is used to describe non-legally binding international instruments. The term soft law includes the treaties, legal soft law, containing general obligations and non-binding or voluntary resolutions, statements of intent and codes of conduct produced by international and regional organizations, and statements by individuals, for example, groups of eminent international lawyers purporting to articulate international principles, non-legal soft law. A necessity of soft law is that it be in written form. The subject matter of such instrument is becoming increasingly diverse and includes inter alia economic measures and environmental instruments. Soft law is intended to influence conduct on the international scene and may be transformed into hard law, and subsequent state practice may be such to change the status of the soft law, or the soft law may ultimately result in a hard law treaty being concluded. An example of this was the 1948 Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was a statement of intent leading to the promulgation of the 1966 Covenant of Civil and Political Rights and the 1966 Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. The International Law Commission, ILC. In the 1946, the ILC was established and charged with the task of furthering the progressive development and codification of international law. Progressive development means the preparation of draft conventions on subjects which have not been regulated by international law or in regard to which the law has not been sufficiently developed in the practice of states. Codification, however, is defined as the more precise formulation and systemization of rules of international law in fields where there already has been extensive state practice, precedent, and doctrine. All codification has, accordingly, since 1946, been effected via ILC. The ILC has 34 members who sit as individuals rather than as representatives of their governments. The ILC may be invited by the GA to look at a particular area of law. However, this is rare, and the ICL normally initiates its work program for itself. Draft articles are prepared and submitted to member states for their comments. A conference is convened, which will, on the basis of the draft articles, produce a convention, which will eventually be opened for signature. The value of ILC's work lies not only in the multipartite treaty may be produced, but that in its preparatory work, state practice can be identified and, as such, may assist the formation of customary international law. Jukajins is the technical term given to those norms of general international law which are of a peremptory force and form which, as a consequence, no derogation may be made except by another norm of equal weight. A treaty, for instance, which conflicts with such a norm is void, and should a new perimetry norm develop, then any existing conflicting treaty becomes void and terminates. A peremptory norm may be derived from a custom or a treaty, but not from other source. The Jurisprudence referred to the public policy rules of the international legal system. There is considerable uncertainty as the scope and extent of jurisprudence. Examples of jurisprudence: the prohibition of the use of force, the prohibition on genocide and torture, the realization of the principles of self-determination. The end of Module 2. The end of the record.